Look at Proverbs 1:18. Proverbs 1 and verse 18. Talking about these wicked guys here that are laying wait, laying a snare and a trap for the righteous. But look what's going to happen to them. Proverbs 1:18. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. Now that's kind of curious when you think about it, because they're, I mean, clearly when Solomon's describing them in the beginning, he's not describing them in terms like this. If you just turn back a little bit in Proverbs 1, it seems like he switches who the victims are here, and he does. He says there in verse 11, if they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. So they're going after the innocent. They're not going after themselves, obviously. But then he says in verse 18, they lay wait for their own blood, they lurk privily for their own lives. Well, how so? How is it that they're ensnaring themselves? And it goes back to what we talked about in the previous verse. It's because there's a God in heaven that pleads the cause of the oppressed. And these lives that the monsters end up destroying are going to be their own. They're not going to destroy the lives they're trying to. God is going to turn the tables. Let's look at Proverbs 22:22-23. God's looking out for the little, poor, humble child of God who is in the crosshairs of the wicked. Proverbs 22:22-23. Rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause and spoil the soul of those that spoiled them. The Lord is going to turn the tables, as I said. He's going to spoil their soul that tried to spoil the poor. He's going to do the same thing to them that they tried to do to the innocent. Look at Proverbs 23:10-11. Remove not the old landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. So you get a landmark marking out your property line, and he's telling people, you don't go when nobody's looking to move that landmark, so you extend your property into somebody else's, and you take the property of the poor. You don't do that. Four. Here's the reason, verse 11, for their Redeemer is mighty. He shall plead their cause with thee. Now, if God's pleading their cause with you, you're not going to win that argument, right? God takes care of his own. So it's for this reason that we should not despair when we see evil men in high places oppressing the helpless. Always want to remember that God, the righteous judge, he beholds it and he won't suffer it to continue forever. He may allow it to go on for a while, but not forever, and he will render the wicked their due. Let's look at a couple of verses. Let me tell you what the verse is. First of all, Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 8. Ecclesiastes 5, 8. This is why they're ultimately laying wait for their own lives, for their own blood, because God's going to have something to, he's going to change around this scenario. Ecclesiastes 5:8, if thou seest the oppression of the poor and the violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter, for he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. Even if it's the top level of government, there be higher than they. Whether it's the Congress or the President or the King or the Governor or whoever it is, there be higher than they. The Lord is ultimately on the throne. Jesus Christ is the Prince of the kings of the world, right? He is the King of kings, Lord of lords. He's the Prince of all principalities. So he's higher than they are, and he can change things around if he wants to. Look at Psalm 37, 35 through 40. Psalm 37, 35 through 40. David said, Solomon's dad, Solomon learned this stuff from his dad, I'm sure, I've seen the wicked in great power, and spreading himself like a green bay tree, yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. Yea, I sought him, but I could not find, but he could not be found. Mark the perfect man, and behold the upright, for the end of that man is peace. But the transgressor shall be destroyed together. The end of the wicked shall be cut off. But the salvation of the righteous is of the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. That should be a comfort to all of us. Ultimately, the Lord's going to use their net to catch them, punish them with what they thought to do to the righteous. Yeah.
You know, back in Old Testament, the Lord says, you know, Moses wrote there was good kings and bad kings and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, do you think there's been any good presidents or any that you know of in the last 100 years?
Good presidents. boy. I can't think of one in the last century, really. I'd say, I think George Washington was pretty good. With minor exceptions, he did use the military to quell the risky rebellion, and that wasn't really constitutional. You could only quell a rebellion with the military if the governor of the state asked the federal government to come in with the military. So that wasn't really constitutional. But that was very minor with what we have today. But Thomas Jefferson was he was a good president too. And then most of the other good ones you probably haven't heard of before, because I listened to a course on the 10 best and 10 worst presidents, and the good ones were ones that were very unknown. And I'm trying to remember, Pierce was one of them, and they didn't. And they were generally the guys that didn't accomplish anything. They didn't get anything done. Well, the ones that didn't get anything done were probably just doing their job, executing the law of the land, and not doing a bunch of stuff they weren't supposed to. The good ones are all the popular ones. Generally, the war presidents. Wilson's supposed to be a great president. He got us into World War I. Truman's a great president. He's the one that dropped the A-bomb on... I know Truman's kind of loved around this state, but around this area. But FDR, you know, the great love president. And he's the one that made the Great Depression great. And so, like, the ones that are the best, Lincoln's the one that pretty much ripped up the Constitution and destroyed states' rights and that kind of thing. So yeah, all the so-called good ones were the bad ones, and vice versa. And you know, when you look back through the history of Israel, like you're talking about, especially in Israel, Judah was a little better, but in Israel it's mostly more bad than good kings. And it seems like it's been that way in U.S. history too, more bad presidents than good ones. Pretty much. I mean, you can't think of too many world leaders that were really good people that had the best interest of their citizens at heart, and they're usually in it for their own self-interest and war and conquest and power and whatever. And it says there that the Lord, he sets men over the kingdoms of the earth, and he sets the basest of men up as the leaders, so... Let's see here. Point number E. That's where we left off. So Solomon can warn his son with confidence that the net that these men had spread for the innocent would be for their own lives based on his own father David's experience. So David experienced this very thing, that the net that they set ended up being the one that caught themselves. So one place is in Psalm 35, 7 through 8. Psalm 35, 7 through 8. It says, "For without cause have they hid for me their net in a pit, which without cause they have digged for my soul. Let destruction come upon that, or come upon him at unawares, and let his net that he hath hid catch himself. Into that very destruction let him fall." There are so many verses in the Bible that teach this very principle that we're looking at here, that they are going to be caught in their own net, and the destruction is going to come upon him unawares, which means that they're not going to realize they're stepping into their own net. It's like the dummy that dug the pit for some other poor guy to fall in, and then he forgot where he put it, and he covered it over so well, and he's walking around, and he falls into it. I did that one time when we used to, out in the woods, we were we were probably keeping the property safe from criminals or something. When we were little kids, and we dug a hole like 3 feet deep and then laid sticks across it and leaves. So, well, I'm lucky my poor dad didn't walk through the woods, you know, get a broken leg or something. But anyway, yeah, we ended up falling into our own pit one time. But stuff that seems like a good idea when you're a kid just a lot of times isn't the best. But. Psalm 57 and verse 6. At least we didn't put big, you know, railroad spikes or something in the bottom of it.
Oh, really?
No, we didn't, so thankfully, yeah.
You didn't sit out on the outer end of the branch and then cut it off?
No. Well, come on, give me a little more credit than that, Judy. My.
That wouldn't be a crack, though, for you, maybe.
Yeah. Psalm 57, 6. It says, they have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have digged a pit before me, into the midst whereof they are fallen themselves. Selah. You think about this in David's life, and I'm not sure exactly. Well, this is when he fled from Saul in a cave. So Saul ended up falling in the pit that he dug, figuratively speaking. Saul went after David, and Saul ended up dying an ignominious suicide. Absalom went after David and tried to take the throne from him, and Absalom ended up dying, being killed by Joab, by his long hair hanging him from a tree. So just one more reason why men shouldn't have long hair. End up like Absalom, get hung by it and get a dart through your liver or something. But anyway, yeah, those guys, they fell into their own pit. David had that experience, passed it along to Solomon. And then look at Psalm 7. We're going to see here, once again, we're going to see another verse with God's signature judgment in it. And generally, when you find anything in the Bible that's repeated time and time again, like these verses, I've shown you at least a half a dozen of them, and there's more. When you see this, that should really jump out at us and think, okay, this is really important to God because he's repeated this many, many times. This is how he does things. Psalm 7, 15 through 16. Says he made a pit and digged it, and is fallen into the ditch which he made. His mischief shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down upon his own pate. Pate is your head or your skull. So that's right there. That's how the Lord does it. Now let me give you a few examples. So we've seen the principle stated numerous times that the wicked are going to fall into their own pit, get snared in their own net. But let me give you a couple of actual tangible examples here. The first one is Abimelech and the men of Shechem, that the Lord rendered their wickedness upon their own heads. Judges 9, 56 through 57. Judges 9, 56 through 57. Thus God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech, which he did unto his father in slaying his 70 brethren, and all the evil of the men of Shechem did God render unto their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal. Jerubbaal is Gideon. So they killed Gideon's brethren, and then they ended up being killed. So the Lord turned the tables and ended up giving them the same punishment that they had thought to do to others. Of course, you probably all remember the story of Mordecai and Haman in the book of Esther, in Esther 7 and verse 10. You remember that story that Esther was the Mordecai's, or Mordecai, I'm not sure which is the proper pronunciation, but anyway, she was Mordecai's niece, and she ended up becoming the queen of the land because the king got rid of the queen because she wouldn't come in and do a little glamour show for his friends. So there's this guy named Haman, and Haman was kind of the second in command with the king, or he was one of the higher ups with the king anyway, and he was a proud man, liked to be bowed down and had reverence done to him. And everybody would do that whenever they went into the palace or wherever they were going, except for Mordecai. Mordecai was a Jew, and he was not going to bow down to a man. And this just ate Haman up. He just couldn't take it. He could get bowed down to 100 times a day, and just that one guy that wouldn't bow down to him, and it just was just killing him. So he comes up with this idea that he's going to have Mordecai hung on these gallows, and he builds this great big tall gallows to hang Mordecai on. And then the king has trouble sleeping one night, and he calls for them to bring in the chronicles, not the biblical chronicles, but the chronicles of the kingdom there, and the Medes and the Persians. And they are reading to him, and they read about how one time this guy Mordecai had saved the king's life. He found out about this plot to kill him, and he turned these guys in and saved his life. And the king says, well, what's been done to Mordecai? Has Mordecai ever been honored or, you know, thanked or, you know, anything for what he's done? And they said, no. So the king calls in Haman, and he says, what should I do to honor the man the king wants to honor? Well, of course, Haman, being a proud man, he thinks, who else could he be talking about? Obviously, he's talking about me. He's like, well, yeah, put him on a horse and a put him in royal apparel and make a big to-do about it and you know, whatever. I don't remember exactly whatever he wanted to do. And he's like, oh, that's a good idea, Haman. Go get Mordecai and do all that stuff you just said. And that's just, Haman's just so upset that he ends up going home and getting all in a huff. And then he goes back to talk to the queen. I forget how exactly that happened, and ends up like making it look like he was trying to do bad things to the queen as he was pleading for mercy, and the king got angry about that and said, go hang him on his own gallows. Anyway, Esther 7 and 10, we'll just cut to the chase here. It says, so they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. So I think he made that thing 50 cubits high, which would have been 75 feet high. Quite the miniature skyscraper there that he was going to hang Mordecai on, and he got hanged on it. And then, of course, you remember the story of Daniel and the den of lions. Those men, they knew they couldn't get to Daniel with any evil that he'd done, but they knew that Daniel was a faithful man, that he went and he prayed with his windows open every day toward Jerusalem. So they came up with this idea that said that the king would make a law that nobody could make any petition except to the king, to any god or man. And they did this to frame mischief by a law. They wanted to catch Daniel. Well, Daniel went and prayed just like he had before. And so they brought him before the king. The king felt bad about it. He didn't realize he'd been set up. And the deal was that if anybody did it, I think it was for 30 days, they would be thrown in a den of lions to be killed. So the king reluctantly sends Daniel to the den of lions, and the lions, God shut the lions' mouths, we read, and robbed them of their prey, as the song says, and they didn't do anything to Daniel, and Daniel came out, and the men that had orchestrated that whole thing, they got thrown to the lions, and they got eaten by the lions. They got the exact judgment that they thought to do to Daniel. Daniel chapter 6, verse 24. So this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about here. When the wicked are caught in their own net and they fall in their own pit, these are examples of such things. Daniel 6 and verse 24. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them, and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. I mean, that would be a gruesome thing to think. I mean, just to, you read about it, and you just, I mean, if you don't really think about it, oh yeah, they get eaten by lions. But you just think about them being eaten by lions and their bones broken, and their kids and their family, their wives, and yeah. Talk about God letting them fall into their own pit. They got exactly what they wanted to do to Daniel.
And people watched this. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Christians had these things happen to them under the Roman Empire. They got thrown to the lions, and yeah, people are wicked.
They were play toys at the Colosseum, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've been through that.
Oh, to the Colosseum. I thought you meant being eaten by a lion. I was going to say, you are tougher than I thought. Yeah.
Because the actual wooden floor is actually caved in.
Oh.
Look down from where the seat right is here, the lion dens that was below the four.
Oh.
And kept all the slaves and stuff, and how all those one ways ran together to get them out of there and get them in back and forth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you got to go. Could you go up to the top where the seat? Oh, really? It's
yeah,
oh.
You can go up to the top seat, and you can also take a tour and go through the areas down below. But before
oh, wow.
it fell in, it rotted for you know, years and years.
Yeah.
But people didn't realize all the stuff was actually underneath the floor.
Huh.
Everybody thought that was just sand.
Yeah.
You look at movies and stuff because you don't think that they're actually underneath there.
Yeah. Was it like the size of a baseball field today? Like.
Oh, it was huge. It was probably like the size of almost like. Maybe the size of the cheesesteak.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah. Wow. This can all be summed up in Job 5 and verse 13. And this verse is actually quoted by the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, showing us that the book of Job is scripture. Job 5 and verse 13. Says he taketh the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the froward is carried headlong. And Paul quotes that in 1 Corinthians 3:19, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness. So just like their craftiness to craft this law to catch Daniel, took them in their own devices, right? Contrive this thing to hang Mordecai, took him in his own devices. Ended up hanging him on his own gallows. That's pretty neat. And then Solomon enshrined these observations in his Proverbs, not only for his son, but for all of God's children throughout all the ages. And I'll just give you a few verses here, in two in Proverbs and one in Ecclesiastes, where Solomon tells us these, reiterates the same things that we've been learning here tonight. Proverbs 11, 5 through 6. It says, "The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness." Think Mordecai, Haman, Daniel, the men that set him up. Verse 6, "The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them." Daniel, Mordecai. "But transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness." Haman, the men that set up Daniel. That's how it works. Proverbs 26 and verse 27. "Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him." And let me give you one more. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 8. "He that diggeth the pit shall fall into it, and whoso breaketh an hedge, a serpent shall bite him." So that takes care of Proverbs 1:18. Next time we'll look at Proverbs 1:19, and that'll be the last verse in this midsection of Proverbs 1. So Proverbs 1 is broken up basically into three sections. The first section where it talks about the purpose of the Proverbs, and then that second section there warning his son to stay away from evil men, and then the third section is wisdom crying out to men to repent, and when they don't, then wisdom ends up turning them over to their own devices, and we'll get into that here soon, but next time will be Proverbs 1:19.